Morning. Today's daf is Lamed Gimel and Shavuos. We are in Lamed Beis. Lamed Beis. We're about a quarter of the way down in the Gemara. We're starting this morning with the words Hakomodim Beidecha to Rabbi Abba. It's about 10 lines from the top of the Amud. Gemara has been treating us in this fourth paragraph of Shavuos to the topic of Eid Shavuos, and specifically to this idea that if you are solicited by the towing, by the claim, by the plaintiff that you have testimony, and if you come to court and you provide your testimony, so he's going to be awarded money, and you deny knowing testimony, and either A, you swear that you don't know testimony, or B, you're placed under oath, and while being placed under oath, you deny that you don't have testimony under those circumstances. So now you violated the aveir in the Torah of not giving testimony, and you have to bring a carbon olav yared. So this is what we've been discussing. And it's a klal gadol, it's a sod actually, throughout this perek, that the only time that you bring a carbon olav yared is when the testimony that you're refusing to give is over a monetary case. If it's on other crimes and other punishments, if it's on malchus or if it's on Mises Beis Din, and we'll discuss later this morning, maybe kanas also, as part of those discussions, so then you're going to be chayav a carbon olav yared. The only time that you chayav a carbon olav yared is only if it's over a monetary claim. Where does it indicate that in the Torah? So the truth of the matter is it's not that clear in the Torah that that's true. And a good part of tomorrow's daf is going to be deciphering how we know this information. But we know it. In other words, part of the Torah Shebaal Peh, that the only time a person is chayav a carbon olav yared is only if it's on a case of mamonos, not if it's on any other case. What we've been discussing in yesterday's daf, which we're going to continue now for just a little bit more, is this idea of as follows. What if, let's say, the testimony that I'm giving is not going to directly require someone to pay, but a little bit indirectly. In other words, what the Gemara described yesterday is a davar garm lamamon. So let's say that I do have testimony, and if I provide the testimony, so it won't be immediate that there will be a chiyuv mamon, but there probably will be a chiyuv mamon based on my testimony. So this is a concept known as davar garm lamamon. What do we say regarding davar garm lamamon? Is it true like mamon or is it not true like mamon? So that's a machlokas. That's subject to a debate throughout the Gemara. We're going to be seeing this debate a couple times in the course of today's daf. Where does this play out? Where we have this concept of davar garm lamamon? So in yesterday's daf, we gave a number of examples of where we find this idea of davar hagarm lamamon, whether or not it's considered like mamon or it's not considered like mamon. So let's say, for example, we said yesterday, let's say I have 1A testify. So, or I want 1A to testify. So if one witness is going to testify, is that considered a mamon? Well, what is one aid able to do? So what he's able to do now is he's able to force the nitan to make a shvua. And if the nitan doesn't make a shvua, so then he's going to have to pay. So under those circumstances, is that considered a garm lamamon? It is, I'm sorry, let me say it better, let me say it clearer. It is a garm lamamon because what's going to happen? In the case where the nitan decides to make a shvua, so then he gets off from having to pay. But if he doesn't make a shvua, so then he has to pay. So there is a potential now where by this one witness refusing to testify, there's a potential that there's going to be a loss of money. But it's not automatic. And so even if he were to testify, it's not automatic. So this is one example of davar hagarm lamamon. And we gave a number of other examples yesterday, daf, regarding sota, exactly at what stage in the process of the sota, ede kinui, ede stira, ede tuma. So yesterday we talked about other examples of something which is a davar hagarm lamamon. Finishing up the discussion that we had yesterday, so we're just going to now pick it up from where we left off yesterday. There were a number of cases where the Gemara says there was agreement. Agreement. Meaning agreement because there are cases where they're not davar hagarm lamamon, but it's mamon mamish. It's absolute money, and it will create an immediate monetary liability. So this is where we're up to yesterday. Akomodim Eidecha de Rabbi Abba. So a case where it's one witness, and the Gemara here speaks to a specific case study, and that is the case of Rabbi Abba. Nascha de Rabbi Abba. Nascha de Rabbi Abba, as you can see in the side of the Gemara, comes up a number of times throughout Shas. It's coming up again later in the Masechta. It's coming up. It came up back in Baba Basra. What is the case? It goes as follows. How gavad dechatef nascha mechaver? There was a person who took a piece of silver from his friend, and asal kamen de Rabbi Ami. Asal kamen de Rabbi Ami. So they went to the courtroom of Rabbi Ami. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Abba came in. Rabbi Abba was there as well. So Rabbi Abba was surveying, supervising, overseeing, whatever. Rabbi Abba, a spectator. Okay, anyway, Rabbi Abba was there. So the case goes as follows. So it starts off with one witness now being brought by the plaintiff. And the one witness says, you know what that guy did? That guy grabbed it from me. Okay. So Amar Lay, so the defendant says, in Chatfi v'didi Chatfi. So the defendant says, okay, you know what? You're right. I did grab it from you. Okay, guilty as charged. But let me just add a little more context to the case over here. It's mine. Meaning the only thing I grabbed was something that actually belonged to me. So you know what? Right? All that you're accusing me right now is correct. And I'm just also adding one important detail, and that is it belonged to me to begin with, and that's why I grabbed it back. Now, Amar Rabbi Ami Hechle Daini Dina Lahaidina. So Rabbi Ami now, who was presiding over the case, is really now flummoxed. He's in a total bind in terms of what to do. How do I try this case? So Lishlam Leketre Sahade. So should I force him to pay? So we know that the only way to extract money from one person to another is through two witnesses. We have a principle of Amotz Mechaver Olav Raya, that if somebody's holding on to something, and he's going to have to pay, so you need two witnesses in order to have him pay. And let me just make this point a little bit clearer. And over here, let's make this point clear. Remember, what happened over here is that there was a grabbing. There was a scenario of grabbing. What do we normally say when it comes to grabbing? So, right, we tell our children grabbing is not right. Right, don't grab from somebody else. But we also make the following presumption. Rashi makes this point over here very clear. When I see somebody grabbing from another person, so even if he were to claim afterwards, yeah, but it belonged to me. So the truth of the matter is if it belonged to you, why did you grab it? Meaning there's a really strong indication, a strong sense that it really didn't belong to you because you just grabbed it from somebody else's hand. That's strange. If I have two witnesses, this is how Rashi presents it. If I have two witnesses who actually were testifying to the grabbing, so now what a basin would do, and Rabbi Ami says, what I would have done now is I would have said, two witnesses said this so that you grab it. I don't care that you say that it belongs to you. When all said and done, you grabbed it. So you know what? The grabbing is an excellent indication that it does not belong to you, but rather belongs to him, so you got to give it back. If two witnesses were witness to such an event, so Rabbi Ami says, so again, so I wouldn't know what to do. In other words, in such a case, it would be clear. Now, lifterei ha'ika chatzad demichta chatef. So the Gemara says, okay, so what are we going to do now? So let's all go home. No, we can't all go home. In other words, I have one witness who said that he saw him grab it from somebody else. So now, what are we left with? What are we down to? So I can't award the person, I can't award it, award the silver to be given back to the original person because I don't have two witnesses. We just can't simply go home right now because there's one witness. So I can't just simply say, okay, putter. I can't do that. So what are we down to now? We're down to a shvua. Lishtaba. So let the guy make a shvua. Meaning, what's his claim? His claim is that, yes, I grabbed it, but it belonged to me. So let him make a shvua. But the Gemara says, but what is the shvua going to sound like? Kevin damar in chatfi v'didi chatfi, so have like a gazlan. So now he's saying, look, yes, I did grab. Do me a favor. For the time being, for just a moment, ignore the words have like a gazlan. I'm not going to ignore it in just a moment, but for right now, let's ignore it. Amar in chatfi v'didi chatfi. So the Gemara says, so the truth of the matter is that yes, I grabbed it, and you know what? What I grabbed belongs to me. Meaning, let's think in general what a shvua does sound like. What does a shvua normally sound like? Person breaks the claim against me. He has one witness that says that I owe the money. And what's my shvua sound like? The shvua is going to sound like, I swear I don't owe the money. Meaning, the shvua is generally a denial of what is claimed against me. That's what a normal shvua sounds like. Over here, what's his shvua going to sound like? His shvua is going to sound like, oh, you know what? Yes, you're right. I took it. I swear I took it. Okay. So the shvua is going to go on the fact that it really belonged to me, meaning that's his narrative, that's his version of the story. But when all said and done, the shvua is really just an agreement. They're really agreeing to the same thing. In other words, the claim is you grabbed it from me, and the counterclaim is yes, I did grab it from you. So in other words, so there really is no shvua to be made over here. So now, havalei kegazlan, Rashi says over here, he's not really a gazlan. Meaning the Gemara over here is just making an analogy. The Gemara is simply saying that, you know what the halach is regarding a gazlan? He can't swear because he's a gazlan. So Rashi says same thing over here. Meaning this person over here now is in a scenario where he can't swear. So we are now at an impasse. And this is after having gone through all the various permutations and all the possibilities. Now the Gemara realizes this is Rabbi Ami saying, I don't know what to do. If there were two witnesses, so I would award the silver bar back to original owner. If I had no witnesses, I just simply say, look, he's holding on to it right now. He says it's his. Okay, we're going to go home. But now there's one witness. Now there's a requirement for a shvua. But the shvua over here is a unique case in which the nitan, the defendant, is simply saying, yes, I grabbed it, but it belonged to me. So their shvua over here is just simply not applicable because he's not denying that he's not denying that which he did. So now what do we do? So the Gemara says, Amalei Rabbi Abba. So now, Rabbi Abba, who was observing the whole case, Rabbi Abba says, okay, so I'll tell you what you do in the circumstance. Havalei Mechuyav Shvua, Ve'enei Cholu Shava. So he says, look, we're in a situation now where the person is Chayav Shvua because there is one witness testifying against him. He can't make a Shvua. V'cholam Mechuyav Shvua, Ve'enei Cholu Shava Mishalem. So now, if you're in a scenario where you need to make a Shvua, but for whatever technical reason, and I don't mean whatever, but in this particular case where he can make a Shvua, so now he's in the situation where he has to be Mishalem, he has to pay. So, in this case, now admittedly, by the way, this case is a unique case. It's not that, in other words, it's not a widespread, this is not a widespread halacha. This is not something which is klali. It's not general. But in this particular case, what we're saying now is that because if this one witness were to come forward and testify against this defendant who grabbed the silver bar, he's going to now put him in a situation where he has to make a shua, can't make a shua, therefore he's going to have to pay. So what is this called? This is called now a direct monetary case. And in a direct monetary case, if the witness refuses to testify and he denies that he knows information, he's going to be chayv, a carbon olav yared. So, basically, I know it was a while, almost 8 minutes, to explain the scenario. But under these circumstances, that one witness now is responsible for a direct chiyuv of mamon, and as a result of that, he would be he'd be chayv, a carbon olav yared. Okay. They're more to talk about regarding Anascha de Rabbi Abba. We learned in yesterday's daf, you remember, that in a scenario where a person needs to make a shua but can't make a shua, so the shua flips onto the other person. So over here in this scenario, how come the shua didn't flip onto the other person? So that demands an explanation. That requires some sort of hesber, which we're not going to do right now. But in other words, we're not even finished really explaining the case. But in the meantime, let's go on in the Gemara. We're on Lamed Beis, halfway down in the Amud. Amar Rav Papa. Hakomodim be'ed misa shu chayev. Hakomodim be'ed misa shu pater. So again, a couple more hakomodims. Everyone agrees? Again, there are scenarios in which the witness's refusal is going to result in a monetary obligation, therefore chayev karbon olav yared, and there's going to be a similar situation where his refusal is not going to result in a monetary obligation, therefore pater. So let's go over these two cases. Case number one: Hakomodim be'ed misa shu pater da amar la ledida v'lo amar lehu lebezdin. So we're talking now about edus isha. Edus isha is where a scenario, the last couple prakim yivamos, where a woman's husband goes away and doesn't come back, and without any information at this point in time, she's an aguna. She can't remarry because she doesn't know about the whereabouts of her husband, and she doesn't know whether her husband's alive or dead. So in this very unfortunate scenario, so she'll be naguna, she'll be chained. She'll be chained to him on being unable to get married. So what do the Chachamim allow in such a circumstance? So they allow many hetayr, many leniencies regarding the testimony that could be provided about the whereabouts of her husband. If I have one witness who testified that he saw the husband dead, so under those circumstances, she can now remarry. Why she can remarry based on the testimony of one witness? So the Gemara Yevamos over there goes on to explain that's not our topic for now. But she's allowed to remarry based on that testimony. Not only is she allowed to remarry, it actually goes more to our point over here. She also can collect her ksuva, meaning now she's a widow. It's been established now that her husband's dead and she's a widow. And as a result of that, she can collect her ksuva. So now with this one witness, there is obviously a monetary component. So with this one witness now refusing to testify, so he is creating for her a loss of her ability to collect the ksuva. Okay. With that in mind now, what would be, there are two scenarios which the Gemara is going to paint. One scenario goes like this, where the one witness tells her privately, you know, your husband's dead. Under those circumstances, this is a scenario where now if he is subpoenaed to go to court, to testify in court, he's not going to be chayv karbon olav yared. Why not? So Rashi over here points out, because now that she knows the information, even though the information was provided not directly, she didn't have firsthand verification that her husband died. It's secondhand. This is what's called in halacha, aid mi pi aid. Generally in halacha, aid mi pi aid is worthless as testimony, by Eidus Isha, it works. So therefore, Eid Mipi Eid, when she receives it, if she receives the report from somebody else, so she can now go to court and say, my husband died. How do you know that? Because I heard it from someone who saw it. Eid Mipi Eid, by Eidus Isha works. So here we have a scenario where if he's subpoenaed to come to court and he refuses, it's not going to result in a direct monetary loss because she can always testify herself. Hakomodim, next case, Hakomodim be'ed misa shupater, da amar la lididavlo, amar luhu lebezdin. I'm sorry, I read that. Ditnan. We learned in the Mishnah, Isha Shamra, Mezba Litinase, Mezba Litisyabim. Okay, and then the Gemara here quotes the Mishnah Yevamos. The Mishnah Yevamos describes how she now, with the hearsay, with the now secondhand report from her standpoint, she can testify that her husband died, and she can get remarried, she could do Yibum, and more to our point, she can collect her ksuva. Hakomodim, next case, Be'eda Emisa Shuchayev, Delo Amar Lididav, Delo Amar Lula Beisdin. Now, if this one witness who did in fact see the death of her husband, if he hasn't reported to anyone yet, he hasn't yet reported to Beisdin, he hasn't reported to her, and now he's subpoenaed, come to court, testify, and he refuses. So under those circumstances, his refusal will be a direct result now of her not being able to collect her ksuva. And so this is a monetary case, and such an aid would be chayev, a karban olav yared. Shema minam mashbia de karka chayev. The Gemara says, wait 1 second. A topic which we haven't discussed yet, but is coming up shortly in our perek. And that is, wait a second, what is a ksuva? Now, I know ksuva is a piece of paper, but what really is, what is it really? It's an obligation that the husband makes to the wife. And it's secured. How is it secured? By property. And generally speaking, the husband even points to a particular property and says that this property now is going to is going to be mortgaged against. It's going to back the ksuva obligation. So what we're talking about over here now is not just a monetary obligation, but a monetary obligation that's really property based. And if it's property based, do you mean to tell me that you're chayv karban olav yared on karka, on property? And later in this paragraph, we're going to be debating that issue. To which the Gemara now says, Dama de tfisi metaltle. So the Gemara says, okay, but we can easily sidestep the whole discussion by simply saying that over here, in this particular scenario, it's there already is money set aside, movable money set aside for a ksuva, and so therefore this is not a karka scenario. And so the Gemara says, under those circumstances, we don't have to get involved into the discussion debate about whether or not there is a there's a chiyuv karban olav yared by karka. Kafar Echeva Hodecha. We're now finishing up the sugya from yesterday's Mishnah, and we're talking about a scenario where there are two witnesses. One denies knowing information, the first one, and the second one admits knowing information. Now, Hashem Bezecha said to Tavar Kafar Amar Darishon Chai Vashini Potter. Kafar Echeva Hodecha Mibaye. So the Gemara asked now a really good question, a really straightforward question. In yesterday's daf, in yesterday's Mishnah, we first learned the case of one denied and the second one denied. They didn't do so simultaneously. They didn't do so tochidei dibur. So what do we say? We said that the first one who denied, he's chayev, because he was the first of two witnesses. The second one who denied, he's by himself now. He's by himself now. He himself could not have brought about a monetary obligation. So therefore, his denial is not going to be registered as a formal denial, because he's only one of one witness, not one of two witnesses anymore. So the Gemara says, if we have back-to-back denials, and the second denial is pater, so if I have a denial and then I have the next one saying, yeah, I know the information, I'm ready to testify, of course the second one is not going to be chayv a karban olav yared. In fact, the second one did the right thing. He admitted he knows the information. So why would I need the Mishnah to teach me that case? So the Gemara's answer is like this. Here's what happened in this scenario. They are both subpoenaed to come to court. And they both deny. They know information. And let's even say that they both denied it either simultaneously or tokidei dibur one another. And then the second one, who is right now just a second away from denying, says, you know what? I changed my mind. I do know information. I'm ready to come to court and admit. Right? And I was just, to tell you the truth, I just, you know, for a moment, I got swayed by my friend who was denying the information. And I denied it together with him. But no, I really do know information. So what is he doing now? He's basically reversing his position. Now, we said already that once you state testimony in court, and that's true. But here he's reversing himself Toch Kedei Dibur, of his first statement. And what we're learning now together is that a person can reverse his position as long as it's Toch Kedei Dibur. Now the Gemara says, one second. Bisham the Rav Chisid Demuki Lalahu Kareb Yosei Glili Reisha Efshel Eksabtsen V'Sefer Tzurich Lashmunen De Toch Kedei Dibur Kedibur Damei. So the Gemara says, look, in yesterday's daf, once again, remember how when we asked the question, if I have the two witnesses denying simultaneously, how is it that they're both going to be chayv karban olavi? All right. So what did we say yesterday? Well, there were two ways that we said it yesterday. One way we said it yesterday is that we subscribe to the opinion of Yosef Glili, Efshel Etzam, same, that there is a possibility for both of them to be denying simultaneously. So now, if that's the way you're learning the first case of the Mishnah, we're really good. Because now there are two principles being taught by the Mishnah. One principle of Efshel Etzam, same, and a second principle of Toka de Dibur, is Kedibur. But if the way we treated the first case in the Mishnah yesterday is that with the double denial, what's the Chiddush there? They did so not simultaneously, because we hold Eif Shalat Samtsim, but rather they denied it one after the other within Toch Kedei Dibur. So now the Gemara is asking, well, in the first case in the Mishnah, we're learning about Toch Kedei Dibur, and in the second case of the Mishnah, what are we learning about? Toch Kedei Dibur. Okay? That's two Toch Kedei Diburs in one Mishnah. And I don't need that. Ella, the Rabbi Yochanan, Reisha Toka de Dibur, Sefer Toka de Dibur, Tartal Amali. And the Gemara asks exactly this question. Why do I need the double Toka de Dibur? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Because in the first case, there are two Toka de Diburs. The first one is coming to teach me that I can link together two testimonies. One testimony, second testimony, as long as they're within Toka de Dibur. Or I can link two denials. One denial, second denial, and each one of them is betoche de dibur of one another. And as we discussed in yesterday's daf, it just simply means that as one finishes his statement, the other one starts his statement betoche de dibur. So we're linking the two. Gemara says that's fine. But what are we now saying? We're actually now saying even a bigger chiddush in toke de dibur. Toke de dibur not only allows us to take two statements of two different people and link them together, but it's able to take one statement of one individual and flip it. So in other words, the person starts off by saying, I deny knowing any information. And then, in toke de dibur now, he's going to make a second statement, I'd like to resubmit my statement. I would like now to say that I do know information and take what I just said and flip it. And as long as the second statement is said within Toka de Dibur of the first statement, so that allows us now to flip the statement. So now the Gemara explains beautifully. So what's the second Toka de Dibur coming to teach me? That as long as I'm making the second statement within Toka de Dibur of the first statement, it allows me to flip the first statement. Top bottom of the Amud Beis, last two lines. The next scenario in the Mishnah is where I have two sets of witnesses. Two sets of witnesses. First set of witnesses are subpoenaed to come into court, testify, they come into court, and they deny. We don't know anything. Sorry. And they lied. So what the Mishnah taught us is that they're going to be chayav of carbon olav yared because they are denying that they know testimony. Second set of witnesses come in, and they repeat, we also don't know anything. We're also denying that we know anything. We swear we don't know anything. So they're going to be chayv as well. And at this point in time, when we learned the Mishnah yesterday, as we're saying it right now, makes sense. Because unlike in the case where there are only two witnesses, once the first witness drops out, second witness is by himself. He can't create a chayv carbon mammon. Sorry. He can't create a chayv mammon. But in this case, where there are two sets of witnesses, even as the first set of witnesses drop out, but the second set of witnesses by themselves can create a chiyuv mamon. So that's why the second set of witnesses are going to be chayiv a karbon, because they themselves could require, they could have been mechayiv mamon. But now, let's ask a question, the Gemara's question, which is, wait one second. In the first set of witnesses, when they deny, did they create a loss? Maybe. Not yet. Meaning there's still a second set of witnesses to come around to. So in other words, when the first set of witnesses are in fact denying, that doesn't create an immediate loss because we know that there's a second set of witnesses. So why don't we say, this is the Gemara's question, I'm just spelling it out right now, why don't we say that the first set of witnesses should not be chayv karban olav yared because their refusal is not going to result in an immediate loss of money? Gemara's question.
Rishona, Ella Rishona, Amai, Hai Kaim Mashniya.
While the first set of witnesses are denying, you still have a second set of witnesses. So the case is not over yet. So Amar Avina Hachav Ma'iskin Kegon Shai Sashnia B'Shas Tfiras Rishona Krovim B'Nushoseim. Krovim B'Nushoseim. Let's put a comma right there. So the Gemara says, well, the case is as follows: that as the first set of witnesses were testifying, you know what the story with the second set of witnesses are. Right now, they were currently right now not able to testify. They were there, they saw it, but they were not able to testify. Why not? So I'm going to say over the Gemara like Rashi. Tosfos doesn't like it, but I'm going to say over the Gemara like Rashi, and that is because the second set of witnesses were related to one another. They were in halacha what we would call a giso. A giso means that they were married to two sisters, the second pair of witnesses. And because they were married to two sisters, therefore they can't come to court and they can't testify at this point in time because they're related to one another. Meaning, krovim by edim means either that it could be related to the litigant, or even if they're just related to one another, they still have a psul krovim and therefore they can't testify. So the second set of witnesses at the time when the first set of witnesses were denying their claim were in a position where they couldn't testify. And then what happened, and now, good, now we understand. Meaning, when the first set of witnesses deny, why are they chayav, a carbon olav ERA? Because at that juncture, they were the only witnesses. And therefore, their denial is going to result in a loss of money. But now, after they denied it, then what happens is that the wives die. All right, you know, right, I don't need both of them. Right, the wives die, or wife dies, now they're no longer related, and now they can testify, and now when they deny, they too are going to be chayv, a carbon olav yared. Now the Gemara says, with all that said and done, now the Gemara doesn't have this word in here, but I'm going to insert a word in the Gemara. Not because I'm really doing so, just to explain the flow of the Gemara, pshita. So if this is the case in the Mishnah, okay, it's a, you know, slightly more complicated case, but really, when all said and done, pashut. Right? In other words, at the time when the first testified, they're the only witnesses. And when I have a Mishnah, the Mishnah is always there to provide a Chiddush. The Mishnah is not just simply constructing scenarios in which we could have figured it out on our own simply because we know the rules. There has to be in the Mishnah nuance, subtlety. There has to be Chiddushim in the Mishnah. What's the Chiddush in such a scenario? So the Gemara, that's the next line of the Gemara. Gemara says, oh, Nishoseim, Gosisos. And the Mishnah now adds that at the time when the first witnesses were testifying, so the wives of the second witnesses were in a state where they were gosesim. They were holech lamos. They were in critical condition, but not yet dead. And now there's a chiddush. What happens when it comes to a goses? A goses is going to die. That is pretty much a statistical reality. So this is what's called a rov, a ruba de lesa kaman. Meaning this is a statistical majority, but it's the majority. And you know the principle of rov is very strong. Although in this particular case, the rov is really going against the chazaka. Because what's the chazaka telling us? They were alive, right? And chazaka means status quo. So the status quo of their status is that they're alive. And even right now that they're a goses and they're holech lamos, but right now they're alive. How do we treat a goses vis-a-vis halacha? Are they treated like chayim or are they treated like mesim? So the chiddush now is that treated like chayim? In other words, even though they're gosesim, and even though they're holech lamos, nevertheless, at this juncture, we're treating them like chayim. So that means that the second set of witnesses now are still related, even though their wives, or one of their wives is holech lamos, and that's now the chiddush in the Mishnah. So that at this juncture now, there's only the first set of witnesses, there's no second set of witnesses. First set of witnesses deny, they're going to be chayiv. Then when one of the wives die of the second set, now they can testify, and their denial is also going to result in a chiyuv karban olav yared. Because there are competing values when it comes to a goses. On one hand, the rov tells us that they're going to die in the very near future.
They're going to die. They're not dead.
So. Okay, but rov is a halachic concept. Rov is not, you know, rov is not just a, it's a nice idea. Rov is a reality. Rov creates a reality. So but on the other hand, you have the chazaka that they're alive. Right, that's... Okay, so in other words, right. So in other areas, so rov is going to be a serious consideration. Over here, the cheskes chaim is going to overweigh that. It's a... That's right. It's a... Right. Also right. In other words, goses means that... In other words, it's not just like... Goses means that they're really on their way out. They're checking out. Okay. We are now on Lamigim Amad Aleph. We're starting the Mishnah. Mashmiyani Alechem Im Lo Tavo V'Tayiduni. Sheyesh Li Biyad Ploni. So now I am not only soliciting, I'm subpoenaing a witness to come to court, but on top of that, I got this guy in my sights, and I got multiple claims against this guy. This guy is, from my standpoint, he's a total deadbeat. And what does this guy have? So this guy has a picadon, he has an object that I deposited by him, tzimasyad, he's got money that I gave him, gezel, he stole from me, so he's holding that in his hands, and aveda, and he's holding one of my lost items. Okay. Okay, he's got there's a lot going on between these two people. Okay, but anyway, but I know these particular Adam now have information on all four of these monetary claims that I have against this one guy. And now I'm saying to the aid, come on, Nu, help me out over here. And that's not just one aid, by the way. It has to be two Adam. So I say to the pair of Adam, let's go, help me out over here. All right, I have all these claims against me. And shvur shein ani yodim l'chaidus. And what do? They give a blanket denial, a general denial. No, we don't know anything. Now, even though he articulated the four claims that he has against the person, they, the witnesses, just simply say, nope, well, we're excused. We don't know anything. So under those circumstances, ein chayavim ela achas. So it is under oath. It is a denial. It will register as a kfiras mamon. But because they themselves didn't acknowledge each one of the claims, so therefore their general denial is only going to result in one chiyuv karbon. On the other hand, shvu shein ani yodim sheyesh lecha biyad ploni pikadon sumasyad gezel aveda chayav al klachas v'achas. If, however, in their denial they specify and articulate all four monetary claims that there are that they were at least claimed that they knew this information, and they're denying it, and they specify, so now they're going to be chayav on each one of the denials. Next case in the Mishnah. Mashpiani alechem im lo savo v'sayidi sheyesh li biyad ploni pikadon chitin sorin v'kusmin shvur shein anu yodim. Sorry, let's first explain what the plaintiff wants. Plaintiff goes over to the witnesses and said, look, that guy, I deposited by that guy various grains. I gave him wheat, barley, and spelt. And do me a favor, help me out. I know you saw me hand it over to him. So can the two of you come to court and testify on my behalf so I can get it back? And shvua sheinan yodin lecha edus ein chayav nalacha. So their denial once again is a blanket denial. We don't know what you're talking about. We don't know any information, and they don't specify. So now it's one blanket denial. Therefore, they are going to be they're only going to be subject to one carbon olav yored. However, shvua sheinan yodin lecha edus sheish lecha biyad ploni chitim v'sa'orim v'kusmin chayav nalkol achas v'achas. But in a scenario in which they specify, no, we don't know anything about the wheat, no, nor the barley, nor the spelt, so they're going to be chayav on each one. These two cases, right? These two cases are really similar to one another. Why is the need for these two cases? Stay tuned. Mashbiani alechem im lo savo v'seidun sheyesh li biyad ploni nezek chazi nezek tashlum mekefal v'tashlum arba v'chamisha v'sha'anas ish ploni es biti upita es biti v'shikani bini v'shechava bi chavere u'shehidlik es gedish v'yam kippurim hare elu chayavim. So these cases are not necessarily lumped together. Let me explain each one of these cases. I'll do so quickly, but I'll explain each one of these cases. I'm asking the witnesses to come and testify because this person either owes me. Let's go over each one of these cases. Nezik, damages. So in other words, damages is a simple scenario in which, right, he did damage to me. He now owes me money based on the damages. You witnesses saw the damage occur. You know now that they owe me the money. Can you help testify on my behalf? That's nezik. Chatzi nezik. Chatzi nezik generally is a scenario in which I have his ox gore my property. An ox that gores, as long as it's not been a repeat offender, is only have to pay half damages. This is chatzi nezek. So that's another claim. I'm asking the witnesses to testify on my behalf. Tashlume kefal. A person steals from me, and now after he stole from me, he denies that he has the item. I point to him and I say, hey, give it back to me. He says, what? Give what back to you? I don't know what you're talking about. And he denies having stolen it. So under those circumstances, he has to now pay double the value of that which he stole. If he has the item, he'll bring me back the item and pay it back again. But in other words, he has to pay kefal. Tashlumi arba v'chamisha, right? We're all familiar. Person steals from me, and then after steal from me, either he shechs the animal that he stole from me, or he sold the animal, under those circumstances, he has this super kanas that he needs to pay me 4 or 5 times the amount of the item, depending on whether it's a large animal or a small animal. Vishanas ish ploni es biti. Person violated my daughter, so under those circumstances, so he needs to pay me, meaning the father of the daughter is the owner of this kanas. He's the address of this kanas, so he needs to pay me the kanas of 50 kesef. Upita esbiti, or seduction. So there too, there is a payment that is required in the event that the man does not want to marry the daughter. Shikani bini, or let's say he hit my son. Vishachava bi, or he was chova me. Vishachava bi chavirai. Ushehilik es gidishi bi yom kippurim. Or if he lit my haystack on fire on Yom Kippur. Why Yom Kippur? Why is the example of Yom Kippur being used over here? So you've been around the daf long enough, you'll know, because Yom Kippur does not produce a kimle b'derabim in a scenario. Meaning, violating Yom Kippur is not a chi of misas bide adam. It's not a capital punishment. It's not a capital crime. It does result in kares, but not misa bide shamayim. Therefore, there's no kimle, and therefore there is going to be a monetary claim against the person who lit my house on fire. Shikani Bini means he is my son. I'm sorry. My son hit me. Rashi points out over here there cannot be a chabura. If there's a chabura, so then it's kimle b'derabimine. So in other words, he hit me and he owes me money. And the witnesses, I'm saying to the witnesses, you saw it and you know he owes me the money. Okay, so what do we have over here? Because the Mishnah's point over here is just simply that it's not, these are scenarios where you might have thought otherwise. You might have thought otherwise because one because there are, a lot of them are kenosos, which is going to be the Gemara's first discussion, and then you might have thought otherwise because of kimle. But in other words, but there's no kimle in any of these scenarios, even though some of these scenarios are really close to kimle, right? Where your son hit me. Where I'm sorry, I said that again. Where my son hit me. So right, that's close to a case of kimle. Or someone lit my house on fire on Yom Kippur. That's close to Kimle. Okay, so those are the chidushim there. Ibayiluhu. The Gemara's question over here, which is really going to bring us to the next Mishnah, is the following. Mashpia e dekenaz mahu. Simple question of the Gemara. Again, it's something which tomorrow's daf is really going to solidify. But we know this already. You're only chayiv a carbon shvua, a carbon olav yared, on kfira when it's kfiras mamon. That's it. That's the rule. And it's the rule that takes us throughout this entire parak. It's the yesod of the entire parak, which is that it has to be that the witnesses are denying that they know information on money. It may be usur, right? The Sefer Chinuch says it very clearly. It may be usur for them to deny any other testimony that they have, meaning that if a person has testimony, he should always come to court and he should always and he should always provide the testimony, as uncomfortable as it may be. But in terms of the carbon olav yared, it's only for kfiras mamon, period. So as we have already discussed in this perek, so if it's kfira on a capital case, on malchus, on anything other than money, or if it doesn't directly result in the paying of money, so under those circumstances, you're not chayav a carbon olav yared. Again, if it's gorim lamamon, maybe over there, maybe, as we discussed in yesterday's daf. But in other words, it has to be mamon. Gemara now asks a wonderful question, what about kanas? Where does kanas fit into all this? As we know, a kanas is a punitive fine, meaning that under certain circumstances, the Torah demands that a person has to pay a fine, a kanas, to another person. Not as reparation, not as remuneration, but just simply because this person acted in a way in which is just simply unacceptable. And under certain circumstances, the Torah levies a fine against the individual now that he owes me money. But he's not owing me money because it's an obligation. He's owing me money based on a kanas.
Just some of the example he gave before was a kanas. No.
Good, good. Uh-huh. Excellent. The Gemara is going to ask that. No. Okay, good. So now, if I go over to witnesses and I say, do me a favor, could you testify on my behalf because he's going to owe me a kanas if you testify? And the witnesses now say, look, kfira, we deny it. We don't know what you're talking about. So are they going to be chayav a carbon olav yared? Is their kfira on kanas going to be tantamount to kfira on mamon? That's the Gemara's question. The Gemara discusses. Aliba the Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon Loti Bailach the Amar Yavo Edim Yaidu Yavo Edim Yaidu. So the Gemara says, well, look, if we're subscribing to the viewpoint of Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon, so then the Gemara says we're not. There's nothing really to discuss. What is the opinion of Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon? Rashi points out over here. It's the Gemara Baba Kama. It's the seventh perek. Rashi Yavo Edim V'Yaidu V'Yischas V'Yechayev V'Einu Nifter Bahoda Rishona. Dechi Amina Mod Beknas Pater the Nafklan Baba Kama Me'Asher Yashin Olakim Pratlam Rashiyas Atzmo Hanimil Heichad Lo Asu Edim Lo Mishalim Knas Apumi Didei Ava Asu Sahadi Basar Hachi Mishalim. Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Shimon in the Gemara and Baba Kama says as follows, that even though we have a principle of Mod Beknas Pater, that if I have a Knas obligation, but I just simply come to the court and I forward to the court the following information, I'm guilty. So Moda B'Kenas is Pater. You don't have to pay the Kenas. Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon in the Gemara and Baba Kama says, that's only if there are no witnesses. If there are witnesses, even after you admitted that you owe the money, and even though Basin says you're Pater, with the introduction of witnesses, you're going to be obligated. That's... I don't remember, but okay. So Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon is of that opinion. So as long as you adopt that opinion, you accept that opinion, so then there's nothing to talk about. Meaning that when the witnesses are now denying that they know information, that's causing me a loss. Because he holds that even though Moda B'Knas Pater, witnesses will make him chayav. Fine. So the Gemara says, so from that standpoint, the discussion doesn't even get off the ground. But according to the Chachamim, we say that a person makes an admission on Knas, and once he makes an admission on Knas, and even though witnesses come afterwards, he's Pater. So what is that showing you? That's showing you that according to the Chachamim of the Gemara Baba Kama, of Perek HaMeruba, that's showing you that the Knas obligation is extraordinarily tenuous. It's not a solid obligation. Because all I need is for the Baal Dover to just simply make an admission that he is guilty as charged, and as long as he makes that admission, he's going to be exempt. And even if witnesses come afterwards, he's still going to be exempt. So that shows you that this obligation, this Knas obligation, is tenuous. And now that we see it's tenuous, so if I have a kfiras mamon on the part of the Edim, is that going to now hold them accountable and liable for a carbon? That's our question, and the Gemara continues to go on. V'rabbanan dasam kaman svir lehu. And the Gemara says, and we have to add one more wrinkle to this discussion. And that is as follows. Look, we've already now limited the entire discussion of kfiras kenas. So we've already limited to the opinion of the Chachamim as opposed to the opinion of Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Shimon. And then you have to also add one other wrinkle, and that is yesterday's discussion. Remember yesterday's discussion? Hopefully the answer is yes. Meaning as opposed to the seventh parak of Baba Kama, which was some time ago. But yesterday's discussion, we asked, where the question was, what if their denial doesn't directly result in a loss of money, but indirectly results in a loss of money, or, you know, not immediate, but it's a goring. So under those circumstances, is that kfir going to be viable, yes or no? So he's of the opinion that a davar hagorim lamamon is considered like mamon, and so therefore, according to that position, for sure they're going to be liable. But according to the Chachamim, we say davar gorim lamamon is not considered like mamon. So now, our question, after basically only limiting ourselves to two positions, now the question stands. But the Gemara admits, however, that you really have to follow two positions over here. One is the Gemara Baba Kama that says that once I have a moda b'kenas, an admission on a kenas payment, I'm going to be pater. Even if witnesses come afterwards, still I'm going to be pater. Couple that with the position of davar hagorim lamamon is not considered like mamon. Now, if I put these two positions together, I can now legitimately ask the question, if witnesses were to come and deny a kenas payment, are they going to be chayv, yes or no? That's our question. Admittedly, we had to provide the proper context, and now the Gemara goes on to discuss. Look, all I need is an admission on the part of the defendant, and therefore there's no longer an obligation, and therefore when the witnesses now are coming, they're not really providing an immediate loss of money, or do we look at the present scenario? Currently, in its present form, the defendant did not deny it. And so therefore, if the witnesses were to come right now and testify right now, so they would require him to have to pay. Okay, so, Tashma. So the Gemara says, okay, now that we've laid the question out, so now we can begin to discuss it, and let's look at a number of our cases of our Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Chatzi Nezek. Chatzi Nezek, when a shor gores another person's property and he has to pay half Nezek, is that Mamun or is that Knas? So once again, if you go back to the Gemara Baba Kama in the beginning of the Masechta, so the Gemara over there brought down a machlokus whether the Chatzi Nezek of Karen. Whether or not that is Knas or Mamun. So the Gemara says, well, if it's Knas, our question is answered. So the Gemara says, Kaman Damar Palkan Iska Mamona. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we could just simply say that our Mishnah is subscribing to the viewpoint that Chatzi Nezek is Mamun, not Knas. Hanich Laman Damar Palkan Iska Mamona. Elaman Damar Knas Amaikal Amemar. The Gemara says, okay, but if we can learn a Sugya, and it goes like both opinions, that's even better. Can we learn our mission that's going like Chatzi Nezek is working with the Knas? So the Gemara says, sure. But Chatzi Nezek Tzorah Stechus Gemirla Demamona Hu. So the Gemara says, yeah. Because when our Mishnah says Chatzi Nezek, you know what it could be describing? Not Karen, but rather Chatzi Nezek of Tzoros. What's the halacha of Chatzi Nezek Tzoros? An animal's walking. An animal puts down a tremendous amount of weight on a stone. With that pressure that he puts on the stone then jettisons, it propels, and hits somebody else's property, damaged somebody else's property. This is the halacha known as sroros. And even though the animal caused that damage, and not indirectly, that's direct, that's pressure against the stone, based on the weight of the body of the animal, that is a direct damage. And yet, under these circumstances, halacha l'moshe m'sinai, that the owner of the animal only has to pay Chatzi Nezek. But also built into the halacha l'moshe m'sinai is that categorically it's not Knas, but rather it's Mamon. Fine. So that's the way we can explain our Mishnah, and therefore we don't have to get involved in the debate of Chatzi Nezek. Is it Knas or is it Mamon? Tashma, Tashlum Mekefal, Mishum Karn. I'm sorry, Tashlum Mekefal. What about the next case in the Mishnah? A ganav who steals, denies having had the item, so he has to pay Kefal now. He's caught with the item, so he has to pay Kefal. So under those circumstances, isn't that Knas? The Gemara says, yeah, that's Knas. But only payment number two is Knas. What's payment number one? That's Mamon. That's the obligation to pay it back. So the Gemara says, so that's Mamon. So the Edom or Chayiv Karbon Olav Yored based on the first payment. Next, Tashlum Medal Vehei Mishum Karna. Same question, same answer. What about the Dal Vehei? Isn't that Knas? Sure. The three or four times above, it's a principal value. But of course the principal value is Mamon, not Knas. So the reason why the Edom or Chayiv of Karbon Olav Yored is on the principal value. Anas ish poni upita SBT, ones pitui, where there is a Knas over there. So the Gemara says, sure there's a Knas, but there also are monetary payments. In other words, a pitui and Knas, pitui and ones also involve bodily damage and also boshes, etc., etc. So under those circumstances, so the reason why the Edom are going to be Chayvei Karbon Olav Yored is in addition to the Knas, it's also regular monetary payments. Mishum boshes upagam. So my kamashmal on kula mamonahu.
Boshes upagam are considered mamon?
Yes. Yes. The eighth parak of Baba Kama says that when a person does bodily damage to another, so all five assessments are considered mamon. So my kamashmal on kula mamonahu. So the Gemara says, so now that we're here, so now the Gemara says, so we've gone through a whole Mishnah, basically. And we've said now in all these cases, well, it's Mamon, 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 every one of them is Mamon. With Knas also, but in other words, they all have a starting point of Mamon. So if they all have a starting point of Mamon, so now what's the Chiddush? So now we've gone through a whole Mishnah. If we wanted to say that a Kfira on Knas does in fact bring a liability, so we have a Chiddush, but now you're telling me we don't have a Chiddush. So the Gemara says, Reisha Chada Kamashmalan, Sefer Chada Kamashmalan. So the Gemara says, no, even still there are Chidushim in the Mishnah. What are the Chidushim? Notably, Reisha Chada Kamashmalan, the Chatzi Nezek Tzoros Mamonahu. Look, Chatzi Nezek Tzoros, is that fall under the category of Mamon or Knas? So without the Mishnah, you could have made the argument that it falls under the category of Knas. look, I'm not paying regular reparations. I'm not making full reparation. I'm only paying chatzi nezek. So maybe I could have filed it under Knas. And the chiddush of it is that it's mamon. And Sefer Chadak HaMashmalan Shehid Likas Gidish B'yam HaKippurim LaFukei Mai LaFukei Midi Rav Nechonya Ben HaKana Titanya Rav Nechonya Ben HaKana Haya Osta Yom HaKippurim Kishabbos HaTashlamem Ma Shabbos V'chule etc. Like even the Gemara is basically saying, and you know the rest. So and let me just quickly explain this, meaning that if I light somebody's house on fire on Yom Kippur, so there is the monetary liability and there's also a karis liability. Rav Nechonya Ben HaKana says under those circumstances you do say Kimlei bidarabimine, meaning the karis penalty is going to override the monetary obligation. Now we don't hold like that. We only hold kimlei bidarabimine if they're both punishments that are assessed in this world, meaning by Beis Din. Mises Beis Din and Mamon, then we say kimlei bidarabimine. But we don't hold like Rav Nechonya ben HaKana, and that's the chiddush, and that's what the Mishnah is coming to teach us. Tashma, mashbi ani alechem amlosavo v'si aduni. Shehotzi ishponi shemra albiti chayavin. Hodomi piatmo pater. So the Gemara now brings in a case where there was a person who defamed my daughter. And I need the edim now to come and to report to Beis Din that there was a case of defamation. Now, in the case of motzi shemra, assuming, of course, that it was defamation of character, so what do we say under those circumstances? There's a kenas payment. And here, it's only a kanas payment. There is no monetary payment involved in such a scenario. So here we have a case where it's just kanas by itself, and what do we say? So if the witnesses are denying it, so they're going to be chayev. Hoda mi piatzmo, but once an admission is done on the part of the person, so then they're going to be pater. We see over here that under the circumstances of Adam refusing to give testimony in a kanas, they would, in fact, have to pay. So, Hamani Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon Hu Dam Rebbe Oedim V'yayidu V'yayidu. So the Gemara says, well, again, remember, when we set up the whole question, we said the question only works if I don't subscribe to the opinion of Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon. So I have a brisa right now. I could just simply say that the brisa is going like Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon. So the Gemara says, Eim HaSefa, Ho Du Me'atzma Pater, Asal Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, but look at the brisa. The brisa says that if the person admits it after the fact, so then he was going to be pater. And that's going like the Shita of the Chachamim, not like Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon. Kula Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon, he v'achi kamer. So the Gemara says, well, let's read the Braisa again. And the entire Braisa is, in fact, going like Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon. La mishkachala ho demi piatzma de pater ela hecha de leke edim klal. V'ho demi atzma. Meaning what the Braisa means is that, and when is the admission on the part of the defendant going to help him and going to exempt him? Only when there are no witnesses. But if there are, in fact, witnesses, so under those circumstances, he's going to have to pay, and the admission that he makes is not going to help him. Even if the witnesses come after his admission, it's still not going to help him. That's how you read the Braisa. The Braisa is going like Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon. And as we pointed out in the beginning of the whole discussion, we're not going to ask the question within Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon, because according to Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon, witnesses testifying are going to bring about that financial liability, that financial obligation. The question is only according to the Chachamim, who say that Modi B'Knas is Pater, and once you make a Hodah and the witnesses come afterwards, you're still going to be exempt. Then and only then does the question take form. According to Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon, the question does not take form. So the Gemara says that if we do have the Brice on the top of the Amud, but it could be going like Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon. So once again, it doesn't speak to our question. Let's quickly recap today's daf. Finished off our discussion regarding yesterday's Mishnah and yesterday's discussion regarding what exactly is going to be a kfira and when is the kfira going to be chayv and when is the kfira going to be pater. Our Mishnah on the top of Lama Gimel and Aleph continues that discussion, and specifically our Mishnah gives two scenarios in which you have multiple kfiras, but if said in a blanket form, you're only going to be chayv one carbon olav yared. If in the kfira you specify that I don't know anything about this, this, and this, and this, and you specify the multiple claims, you're going to be chayav on each one. And then the Mishnah gives an assortment of examples of things which look like kenas. Well, if they look like kenas, so doesn't that mean then that kofar b'kenas is going to be chayav a carbon olav yared? If you're a witness and deny knowing information about a kenas penalty, seemingly from the Mishnah, that now means that you are going to be chayav a carbon, and to which the Gemara says, each one of the cases in the Mishnah could be predicated on either number one, the base principal value that you owe, and so therefore the chiv carbon is going on the base principal, could be going like all the opinions out there that says that a chatzi kenas is really mamon, could be talking about tzroros, which is the case of mamon. What about the case, what then is the chiddush of the Mishnah? The Gemara provided a couple of chiddushim in the Mishnah, including the fact that when I'm lighting someone's house on fire in Yom Kippur, I am going to be chayav mamon, even though it presents with it a karis liability, but we don't hold like Rav Nechunya ben Akana.